is this? All of a sudden on a Wednesday, drop it. John Idrola, that you know. All of a sudden, David Sirota, the uprising, on with us here to do a power panel in the first hour. Power panel. Okay, guys, I have breaking news that just came across the wire, as they used to say, right before we came down on air. Young Turks has been, a judge in Texas has ruled that the Young Turks cannot be shown. This is true.
What?
Okay.
What?
It has, but everybody calm down. It was in Alex Jones custody hearings. They were going to show him busing onto the Young Turks set for the jury or whoever is deciding. And the judge is like, no, that is too inflammatory. That'll show how truly nuts he is.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to do a fun segment on Alex Jones on tomorrow's show. His excuses for why he doesn't know his kids' birthdays are unbelievable. Okay. Again, I feel bad because the child custody stuff gets super ugly, and I don't want to delve on that part too much.
I'm bad with birthdays.
But of course, no, not birthdays. Their age.
Oh.
He doesn't know how old his kids are. Okay, anyway, that's his family life. No, it's what the funny part is are his excuses throughout the trial. So there's some really weird stuff going on there. Okay. I'll include the Young Turks portion and we'll do it tomorrow. But there's a bit of dramatic news today as well about another right-wing host. Have you heard the news?
Tucker Carlson.
Well, that he is part of the news.
Yeah,
and then dramatic news about a Republican who's dropped out unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. Dramatic news about Exxon and a sanction that might get lifted for them. Sirota's got a story about Schwartzman that's unbelievable, slash completely believable. And then, you know, look, there's a thousand stories that I'm mad about, but in the second hour, the one that actually got me the most mad was 10-year-old kid gets arrested by the cops in front of everybody in the school. He's got autism, but even if he didn't have autism, it would be outrageous. We're criminalizing tiny kids. It is insane, man. They charge them with a felony. So get prepared to get angry about that. But first, we're all going to be happy.
Get prepared for Fox and Friends to come back from break with video of the kid being dragged away in handcuffs with country music and then saying, that's what freedom looks like. The red, white, and blue, baby.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Fox.
Wait, do you want to be the person who says this? Or?
Okay, all right, sure. Let's have fun. I got my board here, right? Okay.
Are there going to be fireworks?
Yeah. We can now confirm.
Well, it is official. Bill O'Reilly. Well, let's just put it this way.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Down goes O'Reilly. Down goes O'Reilly. And now officially, down goes O'Reilly. Fox News has fired Bill O'Reilly today. Mm-hmm. So yesterday we told you that it was likely, given the news that was out in New York Magazine, Matt Drudge, and other sources. And today it is confirmed, Young Turks have outlasted Bill O'Reilly.
<That's>
Not a big
milestone.
Deal, Bill. Now, we are hiring through our journalism campaign. That's how David got here. Okay, sorry, Bill. Our audience is not interested. Apparently on Monday, instead of doing talking points, he's going to do walking points. I did that yesterday too. Okay. Well, Bill O'Reilly goes in, Bill O'Reilly goes out. You can't explain that.
Bill O'Reilly's going to his house. He's going to his house. Do you think he disappears now?
Well, let's get into that in a second.
Why would he? Uh-huh. Well, we'll get into it. But,
okay.
But that's a good question, but I don't see why he would. Now, it's weird that he was fired, that he's never going to actually return from this vacation that he went on, that he planned a long, long time ago, because he was so sure that that's just routine vacation. But don't trust me. Look, this is how Bill O'Reilly announced that he'd be going away for a little bit, but inevitably coming back.
Factor tip of the day, often around this time of year, I grab some vacation because it's spring and Easter time. Last fall, I booked a trip that should be terrific. Not going to tell you where it is, but we have a contest on BillO'Reilly.com. Guess where Bill's going. I'll have a full report when I return.
We'll never know.
Can I guess? Unemployment line.
No. It's a spider hole in a rock, actually, was found in. So apparently he's going to be on a long vacation. And he could. I mean, look, he's obviously a rich guy. He's been paid millions of dollars a year for a number of years now. If he wanted to, he could simply go away. I personally think it's likely that he would try to parlay this into a podcast or something like that. Yeah. I mean, why not? He's got an audience. Most of his audience would have to be taught how to download podcasts. But if you could get past that hurdle, then he could theoretically make some sponsorship deals if there's any people still want to sponsor him.
I want to be the first to throw it out there. Possible replacement for Sean Spicer. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, ooh, I know.
Now it's out there.
Brett Ehrlich has been pushing for that as well. That is certainly possible, and we're going to get into who will be replacing him in just a second. Now, just a little bit before the show actually went live, Bill O'Reilly came out with a statement about his firing. We're not going to read you the whole thing. It's actually a big duplicate with what 20th Century Fox put out. But he said this: "It is tremendously disheartening that we part ways due to completely unfounded claims, but that is the unfortunate reality many of us in the public eye must live with today." So completely unfounded, which is an interesting thing to put out there right before you eventually. He's inevitably, these things are going to be investigated in court. We're going to know whether or not the hot chocolate happened and the various forms of harassment in a number of different women's cases actually happened. But let's briefly put up the announcement just to commemorate it. After a thorough and careful review of the allegations, the company, that being 21st Century Fox, and Bill O'Reilly have agreed that he will not be returning to the Fox News channel. What's interesting is that that's a very small portion of the total statement, both from them and from him, almost entirely focused on how high his ratings were and how great his show was. And I understand from your point of view, you want to like commemorate the work that you've done and you think that you're great and everything. But considering why he's being let go, and the various allegations, both the new ones and the ones that we've known about for more than a decade at this point, I think that's a weird way to address it if you're trying to pave over the concerns people have about the workplace that Fox News has maintained, the lack of respect and protection it's given to its female talent. I think to say, oh yeah, we're gonna fire the guy, he was awesome, he was great, great ratings, a success by any measure is one of the quotes from it. I think that that's unnecessarily disrespectful to the women that he's hurt over the course of his tenure.
The problem is though, they're caught in a tough spot, right? I mean, they can't say that we're firing him because of the allegations, because I'm sure there's legal questions and liability, but they are firing him. So it's like, we're firing him and he's great. Like,
yeah. Look. Let me build on what both of you guys are saying. First of all, you're too kind to him, John. I mean, we already have the five settlements for $13 million. How can you call it unfounded? You guys paid $13 million to settle those cases. Now, if you're innocent, are you going to pay $13 million? Now, I know what they say. Oh, we're famous. We just pay people that just falsely accuse us. But that would encourage more false accusations. And Fox News is not the kind of organization that doesn't like the fight, that would say, oh, let's preemptively surrender. It is not in their DNA. They fight tooth and nail, and then they go, fine, let's make this thing go away, right? So those are settlements I didn't pay him, Bill. Your company paid because you were wrong, because you did sexually harass four of those women and verbally harass the fifth, let alone the new charges that have come up. Second of all, the quote that John was referring to is, in the statement, 21st Century Fox says, in fact, his success by any measure is indisputable. Well, if it was indisputable, my friends, my guess is you wouldn't have fired him. I mean, there's one measure that his success was disputable in. There had to be, right?
Otherwise, does your show exist?
Yes. So the measure was, are you a decent human being or are you a gross sexual harasser that does this on a serial basis that is so toxic we've lost at this count, about 80 advertisers overall. You've endangered a $14 billion deal we have in Europe. And the morale of the company is devastatingly low for all the women who work there who've had to put up with you and Roger Ailes' sexual harassment for now decades.
Let alone the women who have lost their jobs because they didn't go along with it or because they complained about it at this point. Careers cut short because of his harassment.
So I would argue by at least one measure, his success is quite disputable.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine, David Sirota, your success at Young Turks is indisputable by any measure. By the way, you're fine. does that mean?
So, right. Call that a parting gift.
I would say that the firing is a disputation.
Yeah, exactly. They're disputing it. Now, you might be wondering what happens to the show and to O'Reilly now that he is moving on. Well, Tucker Carlson will be moving from 9 p.m. to take over his slot, while The 5 will move to 9 p.m. with new co-host Jesse Waters. I look forward to the day he gets fired, probably more because of the racist comments than the misogynistic comments based on his history on the show. Eric Bolling is going to be taking
over. You think you can get fired at Fox News?
Not
racist
yet.
Comments?
Not yet.
I mean, like, really?
Well, O'Reilly didn't, but activists are on the lookout now. That's a good point. And then Eric Bolling is going to have an hour to himself. I don't even know what that looks like. What's the audience for an Eric Bolling hour? If I was Eric Bolling, I would not listen to myself for an hour. But he's going to have that hour. Maybe it'll be great. We'll see. Now, the other angle on this I want to turn to is the initial reaction to the rumors that were swirling that he was going to be fired. And obviously being driven by the most recent round of boycotts against his show. This isn't the first, but it's by far the most successful. It's the one that actually worked. Attorney for Bill O'Reilly put out this statement saying, Bill O'Reilly has been subjected to a brutal campaign of character assassination that is unprecedented in post-McCarthyist America. Usually people say McCarthyite, I believe. But this law firm has uncovered evidence that the smear campaign is being orchestrated by far-left organization bent on destroying O'Reilly for political and financial reasons. That evidence will be put forth shortly and is irrefutable. I wouldn't hold your breath. I think this is probably going to be like the evidence that Obama wiretapped Donald Trump and that there were millions of votes cast illegally during the election. I don't think it's going to come up. Also, I love that now if anyone feels that they're being insulted, it's McCarthyism. Everything is McCarthyism at this point.
What about the idea that like Mr. Character Assassination is complaining about character assassination?
It's interesting that you bring that up because producer J.R. Jackson has gone back just briefly into the history of Bill O'Reilly to see if Bill O'Reilly has ever dabbled his toe in the waters of character assassination.
Enter the race hustlers who do what they always do. Again, it gets worse. The hate site Salon bannered this headline.
I never comment on smear merchants.
The hate site Media Matters bannered this.
You know, the far left kooks, like this nut at the Washington Post, Milbeck. But he's a dishonest man.
Then liberal newspapers like the San Jose Mercury News spread the propaganda. You're a hack.
Ah, but Mr. Colbert is a deceiver.
And you are a hack.
Arrogant idiot.
All right, cut him off. He's a jerk. I covered four wars with a pen. Okay, so don't impugn my courage ever again. You're a weasel. And the far left smear merchants have the nerve, the gall to say America's a white supremacist nation? Where the reality is that young black men are doing far more damage than the police in Chicago. We have a case there now, right. The police in Minneapolis. Young black American men are so often involved in crime. Violent crime generated by African Americans is an enormous social problem. The reason there is so much violence and chaos in the black precincts is the disintegration of the African American family.
You don't see the Black Lives Matter crew on the south side of Chicago where it's almost
Democratic cities.
Here in the city, we have stop and frisk policy, which has brought crime way down in New York, way down. Okay? And what that is the cops know who the wise guys are, they know who the dealers are, they know who the punks are, and they know who the muggers are.
A radical group called Black Lives Matter has threatened to shut down the Republican convention in Cleveland next year and is generally causing trouble all over the country. Mm-hmm.
The left hates that, hates it. Because it is racial profiling, but it's really criminal profiling.
Democrats have been very successful in convincing some voters that the Republican Party favors the rich and is anti-woman. Most poor people in this country have computers, have big screen TVs, have cars, have air conditioning. This myth that there are kids who don't have anything to eat is a total lie.
You know, you're making a lot of noise there, which is rude to Monica, I don't think you want to be rude. You know, I want you to knock it off. Killing babies in America. That's the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. For $5,000, Tiller, the baby killer, as some call him, will perform a late-term abortion for just about any reason. You should be very disturbed by what continues to happen in Kansas. This man, Dr. George Tiller, known as Tiller, the baby killer, is performing late-term abortions without defining the specific medical reasons why. Tiller has killed thousands of late-term fetuses
without explanation. No question Dr. Tiller has blood on his hands.
Zealots say my reporting on Tiller motivated the man, even though there's absolutely no evidence of that. The accusers object to my using the term Tiller the baby killer, which was the doctor's well-known nickname. If you're a Christian or a white man in the USA, it's open season on you.
It's a changing country. The demographics are changing. It's not a traditional America anymore. 20 years ago, President Obama would have been roundly defeated by an establishment candidate like Mitt Romney. The white establishment is now the minority.
We need problem solvers, not ideologues. Well, you want a war? You got a war. I'm not going to sit here any longer and take this garbage. Okay. Now, I can't read it. There's no words on it.
Sure.
There's no words there to play us out. What does that mean? To play us out. Right. Fucking thing sucks.
Well, he did, forgot about some of that.
He did and did get played out. Yeah. Now I think he knows what it means.
It's epically karmic.
Yeah.
It is like epically karmic. He said that there's no children who go to sleep hungry in America. You could check that.
No, all poor people have big screen TVs. He knows it because he knows a lot of poor people.
Yeah.
So look.
Also, he covered Four Wars with a Pen. Yeah. I mean, that's
the
funniest thing ever.
He cut a veteran's mic there. That was a veteran, Mikey Weissman, that he was talking to. He cut his mic. He said, "I cover Four Wars with a Pen," and we showed, of course, that no such thing actually happened. It was 1,000 times worse lie than Brian Williams' lie.
Yeah.
And he got away with it because he worked at Fox News, where you're allowed to lie professionally.
He also last year it was uncovered that he lied about being in Florida on the other side of a door when a guy that he was covering committed suicide. Said he heard the gunshot. In fact, he was in Texas at the time.
Yeah.
Just lied about being present for a suicide.
All the serial lying, all the serial racism that you just saw with your own eyes, misogyny, and now and the sexual harassment. Actually, Fox News has known about that for decades. Mm-hmm. And they covered up for him. And part of the reason was for almost all that time Roger Ailes ran it, and he did the same things and even worse. More allegations against him. So when he says these groups are targeting me and it's a smear job and it's irrefutable. Well, it is actually irrefutable that they were targeting you because you deserved that. You were doing this to women in a way that they wanted to highlight. The part that is not accurate is that it's a smear job. Even your own company settled those cases because they were so convinced that those accusers were right that they paid them millions of dollars.
Yeah, good luck convincing him of that. This is the guy that for a decade has attacked Media Matters for simply posting clips of him talking.
Yeah, he has literally called people who quote him smear merchants for quoting him. So, Bill O'Reilly, I'm looking forward to your irrefutable evidence, but you're not going to do any of that. Yes, groups were sick of you. They did run that campaign. You did lose 80 advertisers, and they did it based on facts that your own company agrees to, and that is why you were fired today. But you're not going to do any of that. You're going to go crawl back into your cave where you belong.
Or is he?
Okay, so now O'Reilly's gone, fired by Fox News. Another question here is, where does he go? Option one, cave. Okay. Option two, another TV station.
Has CNN already attempted to hire him?
No, but the thing is, I would say that the chance of him getting hired by another network is really low given these significant allegations against him, given the fact that you know that you will lose advertisers immediately. And that's one of the things that they care, of course, most about.
Yeah.
Right next to corporate parents. Advertisers is the second biggest priority for all these television stations. On the other hand, CNN will hire almost anybody, right? I mean, they've hired the most grotesque people from the Trump campaign, New York Times even. I mean, guys who are totally make up stuff about climate change. They're like, yeah, but I mean, I need conservatives. So I'm going to, even though I'm the New York Times, I'm going to let people lie on my pages just to prove how neutral I am.
So
will someone want to prove how neutral they are by hiring this monster? Maybe, unlikely, but maybe.
And I think you have to remember that what seems ridiculous right now, the idea of CNN hiring him, we've seen examples where somebody goes away for like 6 months.
Yep.
And then it's like, oh, I kind of only vaguely, fuzzily remember they did something bad. And now they're, I mean, again, I'm not comparing him to what he did to Brian Williams. But Brian Williams sort of went away for like, what was it, like a year?
Or maybe less.
Maybe less than a year. It was like, oh my God, it's terrible. Brian Williams is like the worst thing in the world. You can't trust anything he says. Then it's like 8 months later, it's like, he did something bad, but now we'll give him the 11 o'clock slot. So the question is like 6 months from now, when you haven't heard anything from O'Reilly, and then he, you know, is CNN going to put him on as a contributor? Is the Young Turks going to put him on? I'm kidding.
But, TOTnetwork.com/go.
No, yeah. I think if I were him, and we've seen it from other people, I think that the best option for him probably is to take the Glenn Beck route and just establish something independent, you know, your own little online network or a podcast or whatever. He can rope in a couple of advertisers who still like him. He can sell gold or disaster seeds or something like that. Make a bunch of money.
I think that's what got him in trouble in the first place, disaster seeds.
And then he doesn't have to worry about what he says at that point. I think that there's still stupid conservative money to be thrown at that sort of venture. I think that that's the safest bet. It's not necessarily a permanent bet. He can always turn that into going back into the mainstream media possibly. But I think that, and that's easy to set up. I think that that's most likely.
Option four. President of the United States.
Well, no. But there is an option four that you alluded to earlier in the show. So let me just knock down option two and option three real quick. Option two was cable network. I agree with you, David, that oftentimes with well-known people, there's a moment of probation, a timeout that you get. And they're like, but come on, let's keep it real. We're all friends here. So after you serve your time out, you can come back in doing something else. With O'Reilly, that is pretty tough.
Some try, like Anthony Weiner. They try to come back, but they realize we don't want them back.
Yeah, and so especially because those guys, Bill O'Reilly is not in their cocktail circuit. They don't know him that well. They know the Jake Carneys. They even know the Anthony Weiners. He was in their cocktail circuit. But with O'Reilly, I think that's tougher. And plus, he's got a giant ego. And plus, he was making over $20 million a year. For him to be a contributor anywhere else, I think is such a big step down. And you know, I think it's very unlikely. Option C of starting your own online stuff. There's a number of problems. Number one, the average age of his audience, and I'm not kidding about this, was 72 years old.
I think that was a few years ago.
So yes, by now it might be 74. So. For those you to find out that 72-year-old audience online, where? On YouTube? Okay, good luck, brother. Oh, please come compete with us online. Please, Bill. Okay, it would be a wonderful demolition of Bill O'Reilly. I would love to embarrass him online.
Okay, what about Sirius? Something like that.
What about a run for the Senate in New York?
So I'm going to get to that's option four again.
Wow.
So in terms
of mine is option D. We're switching back and forth letter
and
number.
Okay. So in terms of the online or radio, okay, radio. Remember, he had a big radio show, and it actually sucked. Mm-hmm. It fared very poorly, and he got killed by Rush Limbaugh. They were on at the same time, and it eventually got canceled because of poor ratings. Even on deeply conservative stations, he was only on conservative stations, he still got mauled. So he's not good at radio. Online is comical. I hope he makes that mistake. I told you, look, these guys don't know what they're doing. Glenn Beck came in, I'm going to conquer online. And most of Washington and New York still believe Glenn Beck when he makes up these fantastical numbers about the audience he has or the subscribers he has. Nobody's ever verified any of it. And the guy makes it up after being on his gyroscope. Now there's finally reports out, turns out he's an idiot, doesn't know what he's doing. It's on the brink of collapse, right? So O'Reilly, I doubt he's gonna do that. Now, David's onto something. So could he run for office after Trump? I mean, Trump's a serial sexual harasser and he's president of the United States. Maybe, right? And he's got enough name recognition. Brand name is the most important thing in politics. You go to a deeply conservative place. I mean, New York's going to be super tough, but you move down.
But here's the thing.
Wherever.
In New York, that Republican Party, if we're really gaming this out, that Republican Party is desperate for anybody. I mean, they were the ones who backed Carl Paladino.
Yeah.
Who was way out there. Like,
He makes the statements worse. Safe.
Right. So if you're the New York Republican Party, you're like, we got an open shots for governor. We got open shots for U.S. Senate. And Bill O'Reilly, you're a famous guy. You've got some money you can probably throw in. You can at least get attention. You know, I mean, I don't know. The crazier things have happened. Like for instance, Donald Trump becoming president. So who knows? Yeah.
And New York Republican Party slogan, as we know, is "We'll do anything." Right. Plus, Andrew Cuomo will then make a deal with us. Okay. So finally, you mentioned it earlier, David, earlier in the show, which is replace Sean Spicer. So he does have one friend in high place, and then that is Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is not going to be dissuaded by any of this. He's still squarely in Bill O'Reilly's corner.
The problem with that is that then you risk becoming a bigger show than Donald Trump, right? If you're Trump, you're like, I don't know if I want the show to be bigger than me. Yeah.
Plus, if he's been looking at the path that Sean Spicer has had, the reception he's had, he's been a laughingstock week after week. I don't know why, if you were Bill O'Reilly, you necessarily want to step into that, a position where you face huge pushback from the media, theoretically, being mocked roundly in the press. And what's the upside?
Yeah.
What do you get out of that?
Well, which is going to leave me
so power.
Lead me back to option one in a second. But I'm amused by the idea of him going to the White House press briefings. Talking Point says.
How about if he tries to cut people's mics?
Cut his mic. Well, Trump would like that. So, no, back to option one. I think if you're Bill O'Reilly, Cave's a perfectly good option.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the guy who used to own the Clippers, Sterling, right? Dude, you have an ungodly sum of money. By now, he's accumulated well over $100 million.
It's a nice cave.
Yeah, and he's whatever, 96 or whatever Bill O'Reilly is. He's at least as old as his own audience, right? Just take a load off, dude. You know, you'll still have your, speaking of caves, your caveman audience will every once in a while come. You'll do a speech or something, and they'll go, ooh, "Yeah, we like Bill. We still like him. Go grab somebody, Bill." Right?
And write more books about people dying historically.
Yeah. He was killing myself.
Oh my God!
Don't do that, Bill. Yeah. Don't do that.
That's the media headline for you.
Is he married? No, he got divorced.
Yeah, yeah. And very publicly disgraced.
Sorry, I'm behind in my own.
The kids stuff was pretty rough there, too.
Yeah.
Was that over the falafel thing, the loofah?
That was among the issues. Okay, right. Okay. And he still kept sexually harassing people, even after the divorce. Or maybe he thought after the divorce, what do I got to lose, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, his job, apparently, and a lot. So, bottom line is, Bill, you have unjustly made at least over $100 million. Call it a day. Yeah. Okay, we're done with you, and just drift off into the sunset, because any attempt at a comeback is going to be deeply embarrassing. I guarantee it for you, and in fact, I'll help to make that happen. Okay, so or make our day, try a comeback. Okay, I wanted to debate the fate of Fox News too, but we don't have time. We've got so many other stories. We got to take a break. Let me just say, they're fucked.
Friday Power Panel, maybe.
Look. Ailes is gone. That was the most important person. O'Reilly's gone. Megyn Kelly's gone. Glenn Beck is gone. Who do they have left?
Wait, what part of Tucker Carlson do you not understand?
And let me be clear on the record here, although we'll never find this prediction later. Okay, Tucker Carlson is not someone that anyone likes. Okay, his ratings are a little high now. He's like, oh, he did better than Megyn Kelly. Tucker Carlson is loved by the American people. Fuck that. Okay, Tucker Carlson is a disaster, and he will be an epic failure. He always has been. A tiger doesn't change his stripes. He will fail, and he will fail spectacularly.
He's kind
by
of a zombie, though. He kind of like, he keeps persisting.
You know why? Because they love him in the cocktail circuit. So you guys might not know, but I've been in Washington. Whenever Tucker Carlson's at a party, they're like, oh, I do declare Tucker's here, everyone. Rejoice. So that guy will get jobs for the rest of the time, no matter what a failure he is. So right now, though, he's riding high. So, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Rarely am. Anyway, we'll see how that movie ends later. Okay, take a break, and then when we come back, we've got all the other tremendous news I promised you, including a very surprising Republican stepping down. Yeah. He says it's because of family, is it?
And right. Who's the man behind the curtain pulling some of Donald Trump's strings? Find out after this break.
To play us out. What does that mean? To play us out. Fucking thing sucks. End of this. We'll be right back.
All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk, John, and David Sirota with you today. $50 from Cordy in Massachusetts. You guys helped to hire David here through our journalism drive, turtnetwork.com/go. I don't know if you're regretting it after the first segment, but if you're not, go ahead and continue to donate.
Just plain, all right.
$50 from Robin in Arkansas, $127 from May in Australia. Jesus, let me see that at some point where we are with that. And by the way, you can watch David and the others at youtube.com/TYT Politics. Dylan Radigan's been putting up a lot of posts lately, and it's fantastic. Hey, there we are, 1674. Like at 1.750, we're going to hire one more reporter. And if we can actually make it to 2 million, and now there's really not much time left, there's less than 2 weeks left. We will hire two more reporters. So up to you guys. Thank you for all of your participation. On YouTube, on the Super Chat, One Life says, and in the Super Chat, you could tip a little bit, which is nice. Thank you guys for doing that. He says, tipping because I'm bored, and it, no, and more importantly, it annoys the trolls. Santos Huante says, just so we all remember, Bill O'Reilly didn't get fired because of sexual harassment, but advertisers pulling their ads. Great point. John Blackman says, I would suggest O'Reilly and Tommy Lahren form a network, but he'd just harass her. Jay says, don't forget Sarah Palin tried to get into internet TV game too. She did.
Oh, it was a disaster.
And I know for a fact that the folks who ran that copied the Young Turks model. Yeah. What they forgot was content.
Okay. You remember her ice bucket challenge? Terrible.
Everything was terrible in that. And finally, Jeremy Varner says, Bill's next bestseller, Killing My Career.
For Bill O'Reilly, it might just be killing time at this point. Yeah.
Well, Jeremy, we literally lulled out here, so you get a Young Turks t-shirt.
Nice.
Okay. You
nice.
Could pick this one if you want. It's got TYT in the back. Shop TYT.com for the t-shirts. Yes. All right, what's next?
Okay, let's get into some of what's influencing Trump. Since the inauguration, Donald Trump has flipped on a couple of his most publicized, clearest economic positions, things that he was likely to do were he to become president. For instance, he repeatedly said that he would label China a currency manipulator once he becomes president. In the past week, he's announced that he's not going to do that, saying the reason is that he needs China's help to deal with North Korea. Okay, perhaps. Also, he repeatedly said that he was likely to remove effectively the tax break for so-called carried interest for a certain class of people working in Wall Street. And he hasn't said that he's not going to do that, but he's taken effectively no action. And we're nearing the 100-day point in his presidency so far. So why is it that on these issues, he seems to be diverging so far from campaign Donald Trump? Well, it might be that he's surrounded himself with the sorts of billionaires that'll push you in the direction of maintaining policies that they currently benefit from. One of those billionaires is Steve Schwarzman, head of the Blackstone private equity group. Now, I know, David, you have an article coming out specifically about some of the positions he's staked out on those particular issues too, and his business connections with China, the number of different industries he has there. So what do you think about him potentially serving as more and more of an unofficial advisor to Donald Trump on these sorts of policies? Is it likely that Donald Trump will exercise any autonomy when it comes to these issues? Where else might his influence be seen?
Well, first of all, it's not unofficial, it's official. Mm-hmm. Steve Schwarzman is—
Well, he's not an actual government employee.
That's right.
Which is consequential when it comes to ethics rules.
Yes. So basically, Steve Schwarzman was appointed to run the White House, a White House counsel, an official White House counsel that advises Trump on economic policies. Trump says he speaks frequently with Steve Schwarzman, who is the billionaire CEO of Blackstone, the world's largest private equity firm. By being a chairman of a White House panel, but also saying I'm not a full-time White House employee, the Trump administration is interpreting this to mean that Steve Schwarzman, the CEO of Blackstone, is not subject to conflict of interest laws, mm-hmm. is not subject to rules that would force him to divest from his company. And so he is effectively advising Trump and sculpting White House policy on various policies that Blackstone is currently investing in. You mentioned a couple. I mean, you mentioned the currency manipulation. Blackstone, in its own SEC filings, says that it has an interest in those policies. Carried interest, I mean, carried interest is a tax benefit for private equity executives like Steve Schwarzman. Blackstone is also—
to the tune of millions of dollars per year, theoretically.
There was a report that said that Steve Schwarzman, if they closed that loophole and forced him to pay the income tax rates that regular people pay, he have to pay about $8 million more a year in income taxes, which for him is not that much. Mm-hmm. But it gets even more intense, which is that Trump moved, for instance, to repeal the so-called fiduciary rule, the rule that would say that financial advisors have to keep their clients' best interests, prioritize their clients' best interests. Blackstone has a vested interest in that rule not going forward, because that rule makes it much harder for Blackstone to access the multi-trillion dollar world of 401ks and IRAs. Mm-hmm. Schwarzman has said it is our dream to get into that multi-trillion dollar retail business. And our article, which is now up at ibtimes.com, details how the fiduciary rule makes it much harder for them to get involved in that. Same thing with the infrastructure bill. Trump has floated an infrastructure with concepts that would essentially move infrastructure money through Wall Street intermediaries to allow Wall Street to manage the building of public assets. Guess what? Blackstone has recently said it wants to expand into investing in infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Same thing with drilling. Blackstone has been investing in offshore drilling, distressed offshore drilling companies as a private equity firm, at the very same time that Trump is moving forward with rules and legislative proposals to expand offshore drilling. So essentially what you have, I mean, this is a really naked example of this, where you have literally the person who is in Donald Trump's ear advising him on economic policy, a guy who at the White House said, cabinet secretaries are presenting their ideas to me. He just said that him and his counsel. This same person runs the biggest private equity firm in the world that is literally investing in the very same areas and businesses that Trump's new policies affect and shape.
Okay, so let me go even a little further. So he is, as David's been telling you, he's the chair of Trump's Strategic and Policy Forum. That means that Trump is turning to him for policy and strategy on these economic issues. So if, and by his own admission, according to the SEC filings, he's saying, look, if they raise tariffs on China, we're going to lose a tremendous amount of money. And we know for a fact, not only David's reporting, Politico's reporting, inside officials at the White House saying, that Schwarzman's saying, don't raise tariffs on China. Yeah. And Trump is listening to him.
And Blackstone has put out public statements specifically on those issues.
I also publicly said carried interest would cost us a tremendous amount of money if you took that tax privilege away from them. Number two, they said that in public that it would adversely affect their ability to recruit, retain, and motivate their talent.
Yeah,
because I mean, if we only pay our mid-level executives $11 million instead of $12 million a year, I do declare, where will we find talent?
Might as well just drive a taxi at that point.
Yeah. So that gets us to, who is Donald Trump? So, because on the campaign trail, he said over and over again that he would raise the tariffs on China, that they were currency manipulators, and that he would punish them for that, and he would label them as so. Now, did he mean any of it? First of all, a Trump friend and aide, an advisor that is close to him, said, well, he doesn't have deep knowledge of the country. Okay, referring
which
to China.
Country?
The China. Well, us too, I'm sure. But so, in other words, he didn't know what the hell he's talking about. You know why? Because as I told you during the campaign, all he was doing was A/B testing the crowd. So he would do things like in the beginning, like, I'll tell you what. You know what the real problem is? Bangladesh, crickets. Or Botswana, crickets. Or China. I knew it. The real problem is China. That's what the problem is. And what they're doing, well, you know what? We should lower tariffs on them. Crickets, right? We should raise tariffs on them. That's it. That's what I meant. Raise tariffs on China. What's China? Right? He doesn't know. So when you take the fact that he's completely ignorant by the admission of his own friends and allies of not only of China, but also economic policy, he just inherited the money. He runs a bunch of golf courses and is near bankruptcy on some of them. Again, he doesn't know anything about business. He went bankrupt 6 different times. You take it with the fact that he's a pathological liar. Again, in another report, one of his closest friends said, "Look, we know Donald. We like Donald. He's a good guy. You know, he tells one thing and then he says another thing. That's who he is."
Don't take him literal.
Yeah, he's a pathological liar. So is he going to keep his word to you, the voters? That's a good one. He doesn't keep his word to his best friends, and they already know it. And then finally, he's easily influenced. It says in every report about him, whoever's the last guy in the room, he's like, well, okay, because he has an empty head. If you don't have anything in your head, the last guy in the room wins. And the last guy in the room now is Steve Schwartzman. So he himself, Trump, talked about how, well, Steve was telling me about China. I didn't, you know, and he was telling me all these things I didn't know. Yeah, of course he's telling it to you from his perspective. He's not telling it to you from like, this is what's good for America or American voters. He's saying this is what's good for Blackstone, one of the largest financial institutions in the world, the guys that you ran against, you ran your campaign against. So he's a complete and utter fraud. Of course he's going to listen to Steve Schwartzman. Steve Schwartzman, just in this election cycle, gave $5.5 million in legalized bribes to the Republican Party. Of course he's going to listen to Schwartzman and not you guys.
See, you seem so concerned about him, and I get that. But I want to put you at ease because a Blackstone spokesperson put out a comment, because there's all this news now, saying just as Mr. Schwartzman has assisted presidents from both parties in the past, he has provided his views to President Trump when asked. His only reason for doing so is serving the common good and helping produce positive results for the American people.
Now, to be clear, I was in touch with that spokeswoman.
Oh, really?
I was, yeah, for our story.
Do you feel better now?
Well, I don't feel better now.
Okay.
But they would not offer a comment at all on a very simple question, which was, is Mr. Schwartzman evading federal ethics laws that are designed to say you can't be a recurrent, regular advisor to a president and also keep a financial interest in the business that you're advising him on? I mean, that's to me, that is the key issue here. This is not somebody who happened to have a meeting with the president. This is somebody who is running a White House policy council, who is bragging to the press, saying cabinet secretaries are presenting, that's his word, presenting their ideas to our council for, you know, federal policies. This is a person who is vetting federal policy and running the largest private equity firm in the world.
Yeah.
And this is, by the way, our article only goes over what we know. I mean, imagine there are day-to-day regulatory decisions that are being made that will affect Steve Schwartzman's business all the time. I mean, the SEC a couple of years ago fined his company for charging and not disclosing fees to investors. Essentially, the SEC said you're reducing the value of your own investors' assets to enrich yourself. That was a regulatory, it's an example of a regulatory kind of situation that happens on a day-to-day basis. If you are a regulator evaluating different cases to look at, and you know that way up the food chain, the CEO of this one firm has the ear of the biggest boss in the world, is that going to change your regulatory decisions, especially if you know that CEO is running the company and has that ownership stake in the company?
Well, and look, this is why people need to push on this, because it might be a little bit harder in the case of Steve Schwartzman, but we had a very similar situation with Ivanka Trump just a few weeks ago, where they had made it fairly clear they have no interest in her actually being an official member of the White House. So despite the fact that she's sitting in on meetings with foreign dignitaries and being involved in conversations that have economic effects on her businesses, we pushed back on that. People pushed back on that. And then eventually she had to say that she would comply with the ethics rules. It's possible that that could happen with Steve Schwartzman as well, and incredibly consequential. I mean, with Ivanka Trump, we're talking about possibly her business being affected, their large sums of money and all that. But with Steve Schwartzman, we're talking about some of the core economic policies of Donald Trump, perhaps being modified specifically because of his interests. He has to comply with those ethics rules.
I mean, I keep going back to the fiduciary rule just for one more second on that, because that, to me, that is such an obvious situation, right? The day that Steve Schwartzman convenes his first White House counsel meeting in the White House, Trump moves to issue the executive order to delay the fiduciary rule. The fiduciary rule's core regulation is you as a financial advisor must prioritize your client's best interests. And Blackstone has said that that is a threat to its business. So the convergence of that situation in the White House, delaying a fiduciary rule that simply says you have to act in the best interest of your clients, and the company who's the CEO is advising you is in the White House advising you on economic policy. I mean, that is the most illustrative example of exactly why this is so problematic. Yeah.
So look, the good news here is that this will be Trump's downfall. I don't mean in the actual legal proceedings, etc. I just mean in the polls and among his own supporters.
Yeah.
Because look, when you have a company like Steve Schwarzman, that's company Blackstone, but and they, you know, they use as an excuse, he's advised presidents that are also Democrats. Yeah, I know the Democrats also take legalized bribes. That's what we've been talking about all the time. They say, oh well, you know, Obama also met with the CEO of GE. Yeah, I know, and we talked about it. And we said how terrible that was. That like that is not a neutral person. They have vested interests,
yeah,
right? And that you should be aware of that. Now this is worse because Trump is being directly guided. He made them the chair of this policy and strategy forum. He's, by the way, he's also his neighbor down in West Palm Beach. And right after he met with the Chinese president at Mar-a-Lago, Trump did, Steve Schwarzman came in right afterwards and was like, okay, now here's what you do with the Chinese. Okay, that's also in the Politico story. I mean, they're wedded like this. So, and they also explain that Trump takes the respects wealthy people like himself more than anyone else. Okay. The reason he respects them is because, to be fair to Steve Schwarzman, he actually earned it. I mean, it's kind of a funny thing to say when you say publicly, it would hurt our business tremendously if we had to actually care about the best interests of our clients. Which is, you know, what you're doing.
He earned it to the extent that any investment banker earns
anything.
That's right.
It's not like Trump, where Trump just got handed hundreds of millions of dollars and has been bungling it his whole life. So that's why he respects them. He's like, wow, they actually made money, unlike me, right? But if you do that and all you do is listen to these guys and then you direct all of your policy that way, guess who's going to be super pissed? Not in the beginning, right? Because they're like, oh, dear leader Trump, etc. But eventually, man, even your own voters are going to be like, oh, he rebuilt the swamp. Turns out he was just a regular old politician like the rest of them. And what did he do? He brought in all the Goldman Sachs guy. He brought in this guy. And at the end of the day, they're still robbing us and fleecing us. And so, hear me now, quote me later. He's going into the 20s in the approval rating, okay? Yeah. Because of stuff like this.
Not to mention that perhaps like the core 10% of the most fervent Trump lovers in the country, when they hear that a guy named Schwarzman is advising him, they're going to get pissed really fast. I think you know why.
Yeah, but you know, look, he's got a lot of advisors like that. But he's the dick who made those kind of allegations in his campaigns, right? He would put Lloyd Blankfein and it would just when his global financial interests, yeah, right? Now Gary Cohn, who's the president and CEO of Goldman Sachs, is basically running the White House. He's such a fucking fraud. All right, anyway, you guys get the point.
Yeah.
All right, we got to take another break here. When we come back, who is the famous Republican, well, relatively famous, who is taking a surprising break from politics, leaving politics. It is a weird story. You're going to be shocked to find out we don't believe the official excuse. Okay, we'll be right back. All right, back on TYT, $27 from Suzanne in Texas, $50 from Kelly in Delaware, $50 from Joseph in Arizona. You guys rock the entire planet. And one quick tweet for you guys, kicking it says, my concern is that the worse Trump gets, the more corrupt a candidate the establishment Democrats will prop up. Okay, well, that is a significant and real concern. I'm going to address that in a speech I'm going to give in Washington on April 30th. Damn, I just said it. If you want to find out where and when that speech is, because we don't know yet, we're going to text it to you later. Okay, I text the letters TYT to the number 228466. So text TYT to 228466, or go to tytnetwork.com/getupdates, and we will tell you where that speech is, where I'm going to tell you what the real resistance is. And we're not going to let the establishment Democrats trick us on that. Oh, by the way, justicedemocrats.com. Okay, what's next?
Yeah. We'll move on. I was going to comment on a couple. Anyway, not important. Sometimes politics is frustrating. Republican Representative and House Oversight Chairman Jason Chaffetz has announced today that he is not going to be seeking re-election in 2018. We have a statement from Mr. Chaffetz. Let's see if we accept his reasoning for why he will not be running again. After long consultation with my family and careful consideration, I have decided I will not be a candidate for any office in 2018. I have made a personal decision to return to the private sector, as so many of them do. Yes. I have long advocated public service should be for a limited time and not a lifetime or full career.
Sure.
After more than 1,500 nights away from my home, it is time. I may run again for public office, but not in 2018. He finally said, I love serving in Congress, but I love my family more. I also love getting millions of dollars to do a few hours of work per year as a lobbyist more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, look, there's always a couple of possibilities here. One, of course, the mainstream media takes it at face value. Like, oh, he wants to spend more time with his family. No, he doesn't, dude. Nobody actually believes that. Yeah. And
we've looked into his family. They're not that interesting, okay?
So, number two possibility is a girl. Number three possibility is a boy. Okay. Number four possibility is money.
Yeah.
Here, I'm ruling money, okay? But we don't know for sure. So, what's curious about this, first of all, let's just dismiss one other thing. Oh, I mean, you know, I'm gonna spend more time with my family and I've had enough of that, and in politics, it can be wearing. All that is true, but these guys love it. This guy seeks the spotlight at every opportunity. You might get tired of it, not Chaffetz, no way. In fact, he then destroys that by coming out and saying, oh, might I run for governor in 2020 of Utah? I am very, very seriously considering that. What happened? I thought you were tired of politics and oh golly gee, my family and all that stuff. So apparently you're not that tired. So if he says that he's very seriously considering running for governor in Utah, that means it's not likely to be a girl or a boy. Okay. It's more likely to be, can I make a couple million bucks in 2 years between being in the House and being a governor? Yeah. And plus I'll make more money because these guys will think I'm going back into government.
Yeah. And say I might run again.
Yeah, revolving door, and that's a bigger paycheck. If I'm leaving government for good, I still have my buddies inside there. But if I'm going back, cha-ching. Yeah. He's like, what else am I going to do? I'm going to sit there in Congress for 2 years being a schlep? Who cares, right? And at least it was fun when we were in the opposition and I could just blame everything on Obama. Now I have to defend Trump. Ugh, I got to get out of here and get paid. That is the likely answer here.
Defend Trump, and at least theoretically, he's supposed to be watching out for what Trump does.
Yeah.
To the extent that any of them are, I mean, that's his position. He's supposed to be doing that sort of oversight. And so, as we bid him an early adieu, I want to remind you of what a disaster he will be, would be, and will continue to be, at least for the next couple of years, in that position. So, we showed you a couple of weeks back, interview with The Atlantic. It was McKay Coppins who talked with Chaffetz about his position, asked him some questions. She said, I asked Chaffetz if he was concerned about Trump reaping financial rewards from his presidency, but he just shrugged. Which is the reaction you'd want from the guy whose job it is to watch out for those sorts of conflicts of interest. Chaffetz specifically said, he's already rich, he's very rich. I don't think he ran for office to line his pockets even more. I just don't see it like that. And when he was asked about Jared Kushner's family exploring a $400 million deal, you can put this next graphic, with a Chinese company over one of the buildings, while he serves as a foreign policy advisor to the president, was that worthy of investigation? Chaffetz says, I don't see how that affects the average American and their taxpayer dollars. Just the fact that a staff person's family is making money, it's not enough. $400 million is not enough. The world is not enough at that point. And so that's the guy. He's not going to personally profit. He's already rich. He's very rich. I don't think he wants to line his pockets by leaving office and becoming a lobbyist.
Yeah. He's the House Oversight Chairman. His job is to do oversight of the administration.
I mean, look, if you're a Republican House Oversight Committee chairman when you got a Republican president, that's kind of a terrible job.
Especially if it's Trump.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it's like terrible because your party loyalties are saying, I don't really want to make trouble for the president. But I've got this president, especially Trump, who's sort of wildly out of control.
Yeah.
So my whole job is to I'm pretending to do oversight. But what I'm really doing is political defense. I mean, it's not a great job.
See, normally it'd be no big deal. You got a guy like Mike Pence or Mitt Romney. They're smart enough to stay within the lines. So you just take a vacation for 2 years, right? Or 4 years. No big deal. But a guy like Trump, he doesn't know where the lines are. So if you take a vacation like you normally would, if you're a Republican oversight chairman and when a Republican is the president, then you could get caught.
Right, so every day you're waking
up. Damn it, he actually did something impeachable or something horrific, and I didn't do anything. Now I'm in trouble.
Every day you're waking up in that job, and you're like, you look at a Trump headline, you're like, oh, God, how am I going to explain this and not sound ridiculous and pretend I'm doing my oversight job but actually protect Trump? I mean, that's got to not be a pleasant gig. Yeah.
So which leads me to the final question, which is why now? That's the part that I found to be curious, because we're really early into this two-year term. Remember, members of the House are two-year terms, so he could have announced this 18 months in. Maybe if you want to be really helpful to the Republican Party, a year ahead of time so they could find a better candidate. But to do it within 2 months of this term, that's curious. Mm-hmm. So that's the only part that makes me go, I don't know if it's just to go grab a couple million bucks before he runs for governor. Maybe he knows something we don't know, and this is him pulling the shoe, going, hey, man, I'm out of here, man. I didn't do any of it. If he says from going forward, now that I'm leaving Congress, I'm not sure if I'm the right guy for oversight. Maybe Paul Ryan, to help the party, should find someone who's going to stay around. Then you know he definitely knows something we don't know, and he's trying to get the hell out of Dodge before that thing blows up on Trump and the Republican Party. So that part we don't know yet, but we'll see. It depends on his further actions.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do Exxon.
Okay. Although literally no one predicted that this would happen, Cenk, today it was revealed that Exxon has applied for a waiver to the sanctions imposed on Russia just a few years back, a waiver that would allow them to resume the working relationship they had with Russian oil giant Rosneft. That has been calculated to possibly be worth $500 billion or more. So they applied to the Treasury Department for a waiver. Now, how would they actually get this waiver? Well, it's semi-complicated. The State Department is among the US government agencies that, true, has a say on Exxon's waiver application. Now, the State Department is led by Rex Tillerson, who is familiar with Exxon, having run it. Now, Mr. Tillerson is recusing himself, that was announced earlier this year, from any matters involving Exxon for 2 years. I don't know why it wouldn't be for the length of his time as Secretary of State, but they've said 2 years, that's fine. And won't be involved with any decision made by the government agent, any government agency involving Exxon during this period. So that was revealed earlier this year with good cause. We were worried about exactly this happening. Now, let's talk about those sanctions. The sanctions target operations with Rosneft involving the transfer of technology, banning US companies from deals in the Arctic, Siberia, and the Black Sea. The sanctions also bar specifically dealings with Rosneft's chief executive, Igor Sechin. Now, again, let's talk about the quantity of money that is possibly on offer here. Vladimir Putin has previously said that Exxon and Rosneft might invest as much as $500 billion over the life of the partnership. And just one portion of this is that the drilling in the Black Sea. The Black Sea is calculated to possibly hold 30 billion barrels of oil. And interestingly, there's a time element to this. You know, you might say, oh, that oil's been down there for a couple hundred million years. It can wait a little bit longer. Well, it can, but Exxon can't. Under the terms of its deal with Rosneft, Exxon needs an oil discovery in the Black Sea by the end of this year to obtain a Russian government license to drill. Unless Exxon receives approval soon, there might not be time enough to safely drill an exploratory well to be able to develop any discoveries, according to oil industry experts. And by the way, that's just the Black Sea, huge amount of money there. If we're talking about the fact that Russia has a huge amount of oil in other parts, especially more north, they have all this untapped oil that's ripe for exploration, but doesn't have the equipment and expertise in its own industries to exploit it. What they need is companies like Exxon to come in with both the experts and the technology. Now, what sort of money are we talking about in total? These are just estimates, but Russia has been estimated to have $8 trillion worth of untapped oil and gas.
Cool.
$1 trillion. Now, that is not all going to go to ExxonMobil, obviously, but if they can get a small percentage of it, that's some sweet, sweet money there.
Yeah, and it won't be a small percentage. So overall in Russia, there is untapped 100 billion barrels of oil. That's part of where you get the $8 trillion worth of money to be tapped there. Now, I had actually underestimated the size of the Exxon deal earlier. Now, we've been telling you all along that it's $500 billion over the lifetime of that deal, but it turns out it's actually $500 billion that they would invest into this project together, Exxon and Rosneft, the Russian oil company. So if you're investing $500 billion, you're expecting a return far greater than $500 billion. So Exxon's part in this and Russia's profit in this, including the oligarchs deeply tied to Vladimir Putin, is in the trillions of dollars. So now's the point where I go ahead, you tell me what I told you, right? What was the whole point of the collaboration with Russia and Trump saying, at a bare minimum, in the middle of the campaign, hey, they should hack more emails and release them. And the Russians saying, oh, what a great ally we have in Trump, right? And all of that. And again, this is not even if you don't have internal collusion on actual financial deals, just what we know in public, the point of it was the sanctions, the trillions of dollars at stake. That's why Putin wanted Trump to win. To what degree they acted to make that happen is a different question, okay? So, and how do we know that Trump wanted to return the favor to the Russians when I've been saying all along? The proof's right in front of you, or in this case, right behind me. Mm-hmm. He appointed Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, that has trillions to make, as a Secretary of State.
But Cenk, you can't say that because it's impossible to separate the fact that he ran Exxon, but he also had decades of diplomatic experience.
Zero diplomatic experience.
Jake, he recused himself for 2 years. Now think about that. The CEO of Exxon has recused himself. It's like Cenk, CEO of TYT, recusing himself from meetings, and therefore Irina, Jen, me, John can't put together a show unless Cenk is here, because we have no idea where he might go with some stories. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense. He comes back and no one at Exxon knows what Exxon may want except for Rex Tillerson.
It's like me, like JR saying in the middle of a production meeting, well, I don't know where Cenk would stand on Wolfpack.
Should we cover this Wolfpack news? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, I think we know where Rex Tillerson stands on that deal, right? He's the one who pushed for it, he's the one who signed it. And because of that, in 2013, Russia gave him an Order of Friendship medal, okay? So it is not an accident that he's our Secretary of State when he had absolutely no experience. The whole point was this multi-trillion dollar deal that they were working on and that Exxon needs by the end of the year. Yep. And lo and behold, here they are asking for that waiver. I'm going to predict ahead of time, they get it. Mm-hmm. All right, we are out of time. David Sirota, great to have you here. Everybody check out IB Times, where David writes regularly. Check out youtube.com/TYT Politics, where you will see David's videos. By the way, on facebook.com/TheYoungTurks, you'll also see David's videos. Check out youtube.com/ThinkTank to see John hosting Think Tank as well. And we got a whole nother hour for you guys, including, you want to talk about things that are suspicious. Why in the world did Aaron Hernandez kill himself, or did he? Ooh, a little controversial. And should we be arresting 10-year-olds in school? I generally vote no. Okay, but we'll tell you the outrageous story that that's attached to when we come back.